This is a Carlisle ValueCast, brought to you by the Carlisle Group. ValueCast brings you insights from our One Carlisle network, providing analysis, data, and observations to help you navigate the global economy and top-of-mind issues in news. The Carlisle Group. Invest wisely. Create value.
Greetings and welcome to Carlisle ValueCast. I'm Chris Ullman, head of Carlisle's Global Communications. Today we are joined by three telecommunications experts: Julius Genachowski, Managing Director of Carlisle's Tech, Media, and Telecom team, and former Chairman of the U.S. Federal Communications Commission; Eddie Edwards, President and CEO, CommScope, a technology company that Carlisle acquired in 2011, and his colleague, Morgan Kirk, Senior Vice President and Wireless Segment Leader of CommScope also. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Julius, let's start with you. So you've gone from the business world to government at the FCC, and now back to business here at Carlisle. So what do you do on the so-called TMT team, and how are you finding business these days?
Well, Chris, I work with a great team in our Tech Media Telecom group to acquire and invest in great companies across the TMT sector. At Carlisle, we've had longstanding enthusiasm for Tech Media Telecom, both in the U.S. and around the world. We've invested in cable and broadband and media assets, software and data analytics, and mobile, including CommScope, one of the companies we're most excited to have invested in. We've invested about $19 billion in Tech Media Telecom in the last two decades of Carlisle, one of our largest sectors of investment and acquisition.
Eddie, on your website, there's a tagline, and it says, "Tomorrow's Broadband Network Technology." So what does that mean, and tell us a little bit about CommScope.
We're a diversified telecommunications infrastructure, equipment, and solutions provider. We serve three segments. Our smallest business is our what we call broadband business. It serves the MSO or the cable TV market with hybrid fiber coax type products. Our enterprise business is a structured cabling or data center provider, and it is both in the copper-oriented products as well as fiber. And our wireless business, which you'll hear about this morning, is a business that covers both indoor and outdoor solutions in the wireless arena. We are fortunate to be a leader in all of these segments. We operate in over 100 countries with 20 manufacturing or distribution centers, have about 13,000 employees, and about $3.9 billion in revenue and operating income in the 20% plus range. So well positioned in the market. Strong market, a lot of competitors, but it's a good market for us to be in.
Thank you. So, Morgan, we hear a lot about this term called spectrum. And I've been in D.C. for almost 30 years, and every couple of years you hear about the government selling spectrum. So what is spectrum? Why is the government selling it? And how does it impact the telecommunications industry?
Well, spectrum is actually the fundamental foundation of communication in the wireless domain. Spectrum starts off at very low frequency, goes to very high frequency. You can think of audio, what we're talking right now, as a part of the electromagnetic spectrum. This particular piece of spectrum that anchors the telecom business is invisible. It can't be smelled or touched. But it does enable data to be communicated from one place to another. I like to think of spectrum as beachfront property. There's a limited amount of it, and certain types of beachfront property have different values. And so every couple of years, the government allows more of that spectrum to go into private hands and be used for telecommunications of some sort.
And do they recycle it? So if they're selling some every couple of years, where are they getting it from? Julius.
As Morgan said, spectrum is a scarce resource. It's finite. And you can't just say, hey, here's some new spectrum. You know, there are engineers who try to extend the range, the frequency range that can make spectrum usable, but it's still a scarce resource. Here's what's happened in the last 5 to 7 years. Smartphones came out, and they put a demand on spectrum that's many orders of magnitude larger than the devices that you had before. And it's interesting to think about some of the numbers. I'm holding up an iPhone 6 right now. As compared to, you know, the BlackBerry that I had a number of years ago, this device puts a demand on spectrum that's not 10% more or 50% more or 100% more or 500% more. It's 25 times more of a demand on spectrum.
So are we reaching a saturation point where we're just going to run out of it?
Well, there is a spectrum crunch. The FCC is in the middle of auctioning off a number of frequencies under the heading of AWS-3. The auction's not over yet, but it's already led to bids of about $45 billion, which is about twice as much as anyone had anticipated.
Wow.
And, you know, when things are scarce and a lot of people need it as infrastructure for their businesses, the price goes up. That's some of what we're seeing. And if anything, these trends are likely to continue because of innovators in Silicon Valley and elsewhere who are developing all sorts of new applications using video and other services that require a lot of spectrum use for both consumers and enterprises.
So who hands over the $45 billion and what does the government do with it?
So the answer to the first question is companies that are bidding for spectrum hand over
like an
the money. So it's AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint, etc. The government puts that revenue on its budget and it contributes to deficit reduction. And it's interesting, you know, we're so used to auctions now that we think that, oh, you know, surely the government has always auctioned spectrum. But it's actually a relatively recent, in the scheme of things, policy idea that's had a significant positive impact, I would argue, on the landscape. Since, you know, when the FCC first started in 1934 and before that the Federal Radio Commission in 1927, that could be off by a year or two, for about 70 years, spectrum was allocated by lottery or comparative hearings. Mm-hmm. And there were some economists who had this idea that, well, maybe that's not the most efficient way to allocate spectrum, but it was just an idea. And finally, in the 1990s, Congress passed a law and the FCC implemented to start allocating licensed spectrum by auction. And that's had a couple of very significant positive effects. One, it's raised tens of billions of dollars for the U.S. Treasury. But second, it's also led to efficient capital allocation for wireless that's driven not only those benefits in terms of revenue for our budget, but also investment throughout the broad ecosystem.
Does the government keep any of the spectrum for itself for defense purposes? Do they auction all of it?
In fact, more spectrum is allocated for government use in total than for commercial use. And one of the sources of spectrum for commercial use that the FCC and the government has come back to a number of times has been government spectrum. And it's a complicated thing because, you know, government has all sorts of very legitimate needs for the spectrum, whether it's public safety or military use. But over time, what's happened is, in various ways, government users have been pushed to be more efficient in their spectrum use. And so if there was an allotment for government of, say, 100 megahertz for a satellite system, but it really could be done in 50 megahertz, over time that has happened.
Now let's get a little more up close and personal here. When you actually look at your phone and there are those little letters, LTE, and then at the same time you hear advertising on the best national 4G network, what does that mean? LTE, 4G, and we've heard of 3G, but will there ever be a 5G?
Sure. So LTE stands for long-term evolution, and it is the extension of a standard that started with 2G, went on to 3G and is now at 4G, and I certainly believe will eventually go to 5G. What the consumer really cares about on this is, what does it mean and how does it help us? The goal of each one of the generations of standards has been to make a faster, lower latency system with the same amount of spectrum. In other words, to become more spectrally efficient is the way I think about it. So you get a faster phone. So if you see on your phone 3G and you see on your phone LTE, you're going to have a much different experience between the two of these. 3G might have been acceptable for email, which is a fairly latency insensitive service.
What does that mean? Latency?
So you don't care when it happens. So if you get an email now or you get an email in 3 seconds, you don't really care. However, if you're having a video call and you say something and it takes 3 seconds for the other party to hear you, that's going to cause a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So older systems had a lot of latency, had a lot of delay in the network, and they didn't have the bandwidth. So if you, again, had a picture being sent over the air, it might be pixelated in real time, kind of like when you have a bad television signal.
So Morgan, as you go from G to G, so 2G, 3G, 4G, and perhaps 5G someday, is it a linear progression in terms of the amount of stuff you can push through the pipe, or is it more of a geometric improvement?
Yeah, it's a geometric improvement, and it's that way not just in speed, but also I spoke earlier about latency, about delay. Those two together determine whether somebody thinks something is fast, how quickly it can get to you and how much can get to you. Each one of the generations have improved this dramatically. And during the rollouts of each one of the generations, we get much better on dividing up these cells and reusing the frequencies and thus get another enormous boost.
The other thing that's going on is that innovators around wireless standards and technologies are wrestling with this. And we can't predict exactly what the future will look like. But one of the innovations that's being explored around LTE is something that people call LTE Direct. And the concept is that people's smartphones can communicate directly with each other, a kind of peer-to-peer communications that would provide an alternative means of communicating. It's extremely unlikely to be a replacement for the basic cellular tower system that we have, but could provide an alternative, particularly in times of big spikes in usage.
So 13 years have passed since 9/11/01 here in the United States, and I remember that day crystal clear, and I'm sure all you do as well, where you couldn't get a phone signal at all because everyone, I presume, was trying to make a phone call, send a text, send an email, send pictures all at the same time. Would today's 4G network be able to accommodate vastly increased traffic that we saw on that day?
Absolutely vastly increased. However, we found new ways of communicating. So in those days, it was a text message. In those days, it was a voice call. Those were the dominant terms back then. Today, it would be a video, a full streaming video. It would be a picture message. It would be a real-time conversation with video and audio. So the usage has climbed as well. But certainly the networks of today would handle much, much more data, hundreds of times much more data than they did then.
Julius, how would you characterize the state of wireless in the United States versus Asia and Europe?
It's a positive story. You know, over the last 6, 7, 8 years, the U.S. has moved from laggard to leader around both wireless infrastructure and wireless applications and services. And so if we had had this podcast, I don't think we would have called it that 10 years ago, what we would have said to each other is, wow, on wireless infrastructure, Europe is ahead of the U.S. 3G in Europe is rolling out much faster than the U.S. What's going on in the U.S.? And on wireless applications, we would have said, wow, look at all that cool stuff happening in South Korea and Japan on mobile gaming. Where's the U.S. on a mobile apps ecosystem? Well, that was then. You know, today it's a very different world. The U.S. jumped to the lead in 4G LTE, thanks to companies like CommScope. It's now being extended around the world. But the U.S. has a leadership position on 4G LTE, certainly compared to other large countries. And on applications and services, it's a similar story. The most highly used mobile apps around the world started in the U.S. So all of that is a good news story for the U.S. The thing about it is the rest of the world isn't sitting around and saying, oh, well, that story's over. Let's not do anything about it anymore. And they're calling CommScope and they're calling around. They're saying, wait, hey, we need to invest capital. We need to change our government policies to make sure that we have a robust wireless mobile ecosystem, one, because consumers demand it, businesses demand it, and in today's world, it's what every country needs as a platform for innovation. Here's one example of why the products that CommScope makes and the innovation that CommScope is pushing is so important. I just got back from the Consumer Electronics Show.
The big one in Vegas.
Big one in Las Vegas, and this is a show that goes back many, many years, and it's where, for many, many years, companies that have consumer electronics devices come and show what they're selling. When I first started going to the Consumer Electronics Show, the fundamental truth about the show was that if you cut off electricity to all the booths on the floor, none of the products would work. And so back then, right, all the cool consumer products that we use were built on the platform of our energy infrastructure, our electric grid. And by the way, that continues to be true. But now something else is true. If you go to the Consumer Electronics Show, it's still true that if you cut the electricity, nothing will work. The next thing that happened was that it became true that if you cut off access to the internet, all of a sudden, all the stuff that was going on inside the Consumer Electronics Show would stop working.
And I'll take a prognostication even further that those two items, the power and the connectivity to the internet, that they will have in common in the future is eventually that last foot will be wireless, even for power. Because the value that we place with being able to move from point A to point B without being strapped into anything is enormous. And so if we look at what will happen in the future, you can imagine things like video going to 3D video going to holography and putting continued huge amounts of data need on the network. And you could imagine power going from the little power mats, which are inductively charged, to power devices that will follow you around as you walk around the room still charging your devices. Lots of excitement in this industry going forward.
So, Eddie, every day you must go to work and say, wow, the opportunity, where do I attack it today?
We do, and we're diversified in different markets. So we really don't care where the opportunity comes from generally. Our wireless business is by far our largest, and what we've seen in the last few years, if that's been the fastest growth area, we think that that will continue for some time. And operating around the world and in our global basis, we can take advantage of what's happening on the different continents to make sure that we're not dependent upon one any more than others. So we feel fortunate as to where CommScope sits today and being a leader in both wireless enterprise and in our broadband business. And those markets with the demand for bandwidth is what I said at the first. That's all we enable. And that demand for bandwidth is ever increasing. And we see the one thing that we see not stopping is that demand, because the advent of smartphones, as Julius has talked about a lot, the demand to be able to untether yourself from your wires in your house. I have 32 devices in my house on Wi-Fi, which means at some point in time they slow down. But that's the world we live in. It's an expectation of being able to communicate anywhere at any time, and we do it in many different ways.
Julius, how excited are you and Carlisle about the opportunity in wireless domestically and globally?
Very excited. Look, we like to invest in sectors where there's an opportunity for growth, where the wind is at our back and not in our faces, and wireless is one of those key areas in the U.S. and around the world. We're so excited to be investors in CommScope. Cineverse is another company around the wireless ecosystem that we're invested in. So it is an exciting area for us to continue to look for acquisitions and investments, and we'll do that.
Gentlemen, here's the bonus question. What do you think of phone calls on commercial airplanes?
I'm all for data, but I think voice is a fight waiting to happen.
I think phone calls on airplanes will probably not occur because of consumer distaste for it, but more and faster data for doing everything other than talking to someone is probably a driving area.
So Julius, Eddie, and Morgan, thanks for helping to make a complex and important subject, the subject of wireless technology, interesting and understandable. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on Carlisle ValueCast.
Thank you for joining us. For more information, go to our website at www.carlisle.com. This has been a Carlisle ValueCast podcast.